patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $4 a month gets you in there.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Very excited to have back on the show, writer and analyst with Sportsnet, and of course, the host of the Blair and Barker Show, Jeff Blair. Welcome back to the walk-off, man. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Good to be back, guys. Belated Happy New Year. Happy 2023. And hopefully it'll be a good baseball season for us, too.
Could not agree more. And right back at you, my man. And great first episode, by the way, back with Barker there. Love the Var Show interview. Well done.
Yeah. It's nothing like Barker talking, hitting with another left-handed. With another
left-handed. You know, a lot of love showed. Yes.
Yeah. You know, and we played our usual game with Varsha, which is guess which one of us comes from Virginia. And Varsha is our grand prize winner. So, but yeah, no, listen, it's odd, just purely by fluke. I've talked to his dad a couple of times as a player back when I was covering the National League or when he was a coach. And it's funny. I spoke to a couple of guys that covered the Diamondbacks and have been around the team, and they've all said the same thing about him. He does not lack for confidence. He is, knowing Toronto baseball fans, he's the type of cat that I think Blue Jays fans are really, really, really going to fall in love with. It's going to be interesting. I think there's a lot more there, I think, than a lot of people may originally see, but he's an interesting dude. He's going to be much sought after by the media. I can guarantee that, because as I said, he does not lack confidence or opinions.
And 4 years to get to know the kid.
Yes. Yeah. He'll be around for a while. He's a guy that they had their eyes on him last year. I don't know if his move off of catching to the outfield changed their perceptions of him last year, but we've heard Dalton Varsho's name connected with the Blue Jays a couple of times. And it kind of does make sense, because for whatever reason, they just haven't been able to develop that left-hand hitting, defensively superior outfielder, right? And it's the one area of the organization where you kind of scratch your head a bit. Like they have catchers coming out of the yin yang. They've developed middle infielders. You know, they've done okay developing pitching, obviously, but for some reason, the outfield has always been a source
to elude them, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Which is odd, right? Because the history of this organization is producing outfielders. Right. I mean, it has. You go back to Kevin Pillar, a guy who, you know, nobody thought was going to be much of a player, ended up, you know, becoming a really good player out of this organization. But for some reason, in the past 4 or 5 years, this organization hasn't been able to develop that outfielder. So, he's here. He's part of the core now. Right? When you talk about Vladdy and Bo, you got to throw Dalton Varsho in that mix, because that's how long he's going to be here.
Well. So let's get into this latest acquisition that just happened, Brandon Belt. I'm not sure if you caught the Zoom press conference there with him, but Anity kind of states that his knee, so the one he had surgery on and has had two surgeries on, is feeling the best it's felt in 2 or 3 years. The other thing that kind of stood out to me was he's expecting to play regularly. And with that in mind, where do you see him fitting in the field? And if you're setting this batting order, Jeff, where does he slot in?
Yeah, I think he's your everyday DH against right-handed pitching. Maybe spells Vladdy off at first base every now and then. But I think he's been brought over here to hit right-handed breaking balls.
Which he does very well.
Even last year, when he had a down year, you know, his performance, the analytics against breaking balls from right-handed pitchers would have put him among the top of Blue Jays players. It's just, and I know one of the things Ross Atkins has spoken about in the past is when you talk about balance to a lineup, you're not just talking about lefty righty, although obviously as a left-handed hitter, he addresses that, you know, that lack of platoon advantage the Jays had last year, which is something that the Cleveland Guardians organization, you know, the organization that Shapiro and Atkins came from, they always have seemed to have the platoon advantage because they have a ton of switch hitters. And because Terry Francona as a manager has always demanded of his front offices that he has a platoon advantage. It's just, it's the way he likes to manage a game. So left-handed hitters, more left-handed hitters give them a platoon advantage. But as Ross Atkins said, it's not just handedness that counts. It's what is your strength? You know, you may have a particular strength against a particular pitch that other people in our organization don't have. And this is very much what the Atlanta Braves did a couple of years ago in winning the World Series. When Alex Anthopoulos went out and made all those moves, a lot of people looked at his moves and said, well, okay, these are kind of neutral moves. Yeah, they kind of make sense, but it almost seems as if you're tinkering with things. But Alex's point of view was, look, and if you look at that team, I think Eno Saris did a terrific breakdown in The Athletic on this, and I remember it. Their lineup was full of guys who could handle the inside pitch, could handle the outside pitch, could handle, you know, you looked at it and you looked at their strengths and you looked at their heat maps and everything. And my God, it was almost like a puzzle. It was this guy was strong here, this guy was strong here, this guy was strong here. And I think that's kind of what the Jays are looking at with Brandon Belt is in addition to handedness, give us something we don't already have. Now, $9.3 million. Maybe it's because I've been around the Blue Jays for so long and I'm not used to this organization spending up near the competitive balance tax. And even though the front office says, you know, we have the freedom to do that, and you know, until I see it, I'm not going to believe it. Well, I'm starting to believe it. I am a little, nice. I don't think 2 or 3 years ago you'd be adding Brandon Belt at $9.3 million at this stage of the season, right? Oh. So I don't know if that means there's maybe more to come in terms of free agent relievers. I don't know how many top end free agents there are out there, but I'm really wondering what the max ceiling is for this front office. That's kind of the unspoken thing about Brandon Belt and $9.3 million is that's kind of an interesting number to add a week or a couple of weeks before you exchange arbitration figures with Manoa, Vladdy, mm-hmm. Bo. As I said, that's a move that I don't think you would have seen made a couple of years ago.
That's such a great point about this payroll is that, yeah, they always did the lip service, right? They were always like, yes, of course, we're allowed to spend if we present the right deal. But now we're actually seeing that happen. I know I just saw on Twitter last night that Japanese right-handed starter Shintaro Fujinami, he's going to make $3.25 million over 1 year with the Oakland Athletics. And he becomes the fifth highest paid player on that Athletics team that right now sits at $26 million. Did you ever think in a million years you'd see the Blue Jays outspend any team by $200 million?
Might I see any team outspend another team by $200 million? that's kind of dating myself, but gosh, I can remember when the Blue Jays had the highest payroll in baseball in 93. Mm. And I don't even know what the number was, but you know, I guess what makes it a little strange for me is in the past, the Blue Jays they've exceeded expectations, I think, when it comes to individual players, right? Even before sort of this latest run of success, right? The contract they gave Vernon Wells. I mean, they made one of the first things that Rodgers did when its sale was approved, or when it took over the Blue Jays and the Rodgers Center, people may remember this. They made Carlos Delgado the highest paid player in baseball for a while, mind you. That was gone by the time the free agent season started. But I remember being at the World Series that year, and Bud Selig was beside himself. And he basically threatened to slow play the official transfer of the Blue Jays ownership to Rodgers because they had gone out and signed this big contract. So in the past, we've seen them give out big deals. But I guess what surprises me about this is it's a team that has gotten to this point without signing Vladdy or Bo to one of those huge $300 million contracts. Right. Like I thought when we started talking about the competitive balance tax, I thought, okay, they are laying the groundwork for one of these two kids, or I don't know, maybe both of them, to get signed to some sort of long-term contract, which makes sense because, as I said, the history of this organization has been that they will pay their own guys. What makes this interesting is they're getting close to and maybe exceeding it by adding guys, right? By adding 9.3 million here and 18 million here. And if you had told me that Brandon Belt and Chris Bassett would be the guys that kind of take the Jays to or above the competitive
balance, would have been against it, eh?
I would have just laughed. I would have said, no, maybe Vladdy does. Maybe Vladdy gets that $300 million contract. That is, and I can't say enough how much of a profound shift in thinking that is. And I really, you know, I'm not here to carry water for Mark Shapiro, but I really think Mark Shapiro's ability to navigate the ins and outs of the Jays ownership structure is something that we don't talk about enough. Like, if you look at the things that this organization will have done over a 4-year span, 2 years of which they didn't have much in the way of home crowds. That's pretty remarkable. Mm-hmm. They're fixing up the record. They're sinking a ton of money into that. And now the payroll is where it is. That is a testimony, not only to, I think, the commitment of, and I know I'm going to be accused of being a Rodgers shill here, but I mean, I think the money speaks for itself, the commitment of ownership, the commitment of Edward Rodgers and the Rodgers board and Mark Shapiro's ability to sell these folks on this.
A lot it's all right. We get accused a board than one individual, right? It's a lot harder to convince a board of owners rather than just talk Steve Cohen into, hey, this will be good.
Yeah, well, and it's a publicly traded company, right? I mean, the books are open for the most part. So unlike Steve Cohen, I mean, we don't know what the hell Steve Cohen's we don't know where the money's going. I mean, we really don't. And the Blue Jays, not only are they owned by a publicly traded company, but because of the unique nature of that publicly traded company's business, they're in broadcasting. They are the club broadcaster. Their books are even scrutinized more than a lot of teams because in addition to ownership requirements that must be fulfilled, you've also got broadcast rights requirements that must be fulfilled. So yeah, there's a real commitment here. And I just think that a lot of the credit for that goes to Mark and his ability to navigate his way around the corporate boardroom. I mean, I'll just say this. I don't think if Paul Beeston was president of this team, there would be, you'd see anything near this. Mark has a unique skill set that makes him perfectly placed to do this at this time.
I mean, it's exciting to see this sort of money spent and this sort of commitment put into this team. As a fan, I don't know how you could not be excited, but there are plenty who are not. always will be, right?
There are always cynics. There's always cynics.
okay,
before,
Jeff.
Sorry, before oh, sorry, we move go on, ahead. I just want to go back to Brandon Belt because he said something interesting that perked my ears up. So you project him to be everyday DH versus right-handed hit pitchers kind of thing. Roughly, what are we talking, 100, 120 games, he's the DH? You know, again, assuming health, assuming the knee holds up. Is that what we're talking here?
Yeah, I mean, having said that, as soon as I said that, I realized, don't forget Alejandro Kirk. You've got to get Alejandro Kirk and Danny Batten there. So let me kind of pull back on that a bit and say that I think he will get the majority of his playing time at DH. A lot will depend on how the Jays split up the, you know, the catching situation. I can see, frankly, I can see Dalton Varsho catching games for the Jays at certain times. But I guess what I would say is I think Brandon Belt's, his primary focus will be, you know, spelling off Vladdy at first base. And I would think he would.
Do you think he gets some time in left field, Jeff?
Pardon me?
Do you think he gets some time in left field?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know, because the days that Dalton Varsho goes behind the plate, whenever those days are, somebody's going to have to play the outfield. I'm not convinced that they're done. And I think Shai has written about this as well. And maybe Ben has. I'm not convinced that they're done making moves yet. I think they still need another outfielder, another outfielder that fits their particular offensive profile. You know, I found it interesting that when our interview with Dalton Varsho, he was talking about the Blue Jays infield and talking about the, you know, guys he was happy to be with and all this stuff. And he mentioned Whit Merrifield as the second baseman. And I'm wondering if maybe we're not going to see Santiago Espinal at some point in spring training, maybe move to fill a need for this team. And I think absent pitching, they could certainly use more relievers. I mean, everybody could use more relievers, but I think this team absolutely has to add more arms to the bullpen. I can see them maybe adding another outfielder. There are a couple of internal options. I don't know what to make of Nathan Lucas. He's a guy that will be coming into spring training. He's a guy the Jays had all year in AAA, and everybody kept saying, why aren't you going to bring him up? Why aren't you going to bring him up? They didn't bring him up. He might factor in as a bench spot. He's certainly a guy who could play, who could play the outfield and spell off Dalton Varsho. But
he's on the 40-man roster, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And I guess the easiest thing with Brandon Belt is I foresee him as a left-handed DH, but I don't know how much playing time he would I wouldn't be comfortable putting a number of games on it. I think we need to see how this shakes out before we.
Well, that's what caught my ears, right? Is obviously the Alejandro Kirk DH role was a significant one last year. I guess I'm just wondering, is there any optimism that he can have a bigger workload as a catcher this year? And then also with George Springer and the move from center field to right field, do you think that the management group here is anticipating that is enough of a workload reduction that he can play right field for 150 games next year? Are we hoping that he is not a DH at all, other than on rare occasions next year or this season?
The plan right now is that George Springer is going to play. I think he's going to play 99% of his games in right field. In a late game situation where you've taken Kiermaier out or something like that for a pinch hitter or something happened, then maybe. But everybody I've spoken to in the organization has said that George Springer is going to be their right fielder every day. And, you know, when the Jays signed him, we had Steve Sparks, the Astros broadcaster, on our show on Sportsnet. And he was very clear. He said, not only is George Springer a better right fielder than he is center fielder, from talking to George, it's pretty obvious he likes playing right field. Like, none of this came as a surprise, I don't think, to George. I think he realized that this move was going to be made. But, you know, that's an interesting point, because there are days where you'd think you probably want to DH George Springer. Then what do you do? It's a good option to have, I guess, having a guy like Brandon Belt around to spell off somebody. But I still think there may be another move to be made with position players here.
The front office did go to great lengths to make sure that George Springer was out of center field, just trying to limit his wear and tear, obviously. How big for this team would a healthy George Springer be?
I mean, I think he's.
Because I don't think fans even really get how big that could be, right?
No, I think you're right. I listen, if you could somehow, if you could conjure up 150 games out of George Springer, I don't know how many extra wins that would be worth for the Blue Jays, but they're just a better team when he's in the lineup. Everything makes sense when he's in the lineup. When he isn't in the lineup, stuff looks kind of out of kilter. And you know, the other thing with George that I really realized last year is there's, and this is probably, I don't know how this is going to hold up the analytics, but there's a dynamism about the way he goes about his business. I'm not a huge believer in saying that guys set the tone for a team because, you know, as my friend Kevin Barker says, if you can't hit the breaking pitch, it doesn't matter if the guy in front of you is the best player in baseball. Like, you're not going to hit the breaking pitch, right? But I think it's noticeable when George Springer is on that team in general is more aggressive, right? And again, if they can get 150 games out of him, I mean, he'd be setting off fireworks at the Rogers Center. As he is that he's an impactful player for them. And he, you know, I think it was Brandon Hyde last year when we were talking to him, and he was talking about George Springer, and he made a comment about, it was Brandon Hyde actually, made a comment about how there are leadoff hitters that get your attention right away. If you're a manager or a pitcher or a catcher. And he said, George Springer is one of that elite group that he gets your attention right away. The first at bat of the game is going to be a bitch. And I think there's something to be said for having a guy like that leading off.
He is so dynamic, and I sure am hopeful, you know, like they did put so much effort into getting him into right field. So hopefully that is the cure to this injury problem we've seen the last couple of years. Jeff, I got a question for you here that Adam and I, just for whatever reason, man, seem to get asked all the time by our listeners. And so I know you're a little more qualified to answer this. Ricky Tiedemann.
Yeah.
What needs to happen for him to start games with the Toronto Blue Jays this year? Because, and I don't know if it's I'm a glass half empty kind of guy, because when I hear that, my knee-jerk reaction is, oh no, the worst has happened, right? Like, injuries have piled up.
Yeah, my first sort of smart-ass response was going to be somebody was going to go down with an elbow injury. but, you know, I've had this guy described to me by two people in the organization who've been there as another Alek Manoah. And if I had told you that Alek Manoah would do what Alek Manoah was doing, right? If we'd had this discussion a couple of years ago and you'd have said, okay, what's it going to take? What would have to happen for Alek Manoah to be a regular part of the rotation? I'd probably come up with a smart ass answer and say, well, somebody would have to get hurt for that to happen. He did, exactly. On the fast track. You know, I've talked to people in the organization. I said, best case scenario, this guy comes out in spring training and is lights out, and he just blows the doors off you. And all I've been told is, well, if that's the case, then he, you know, then he starts at a higher level at the minors. I don't, because of the Chris Bassett acquisition, I don't think there's an opening for him right now, but I would not at all be surprised if he isn't, for one reason or another, if he isn't part of the rotation in the summer. It wouldn't surprise me. I think he may be that guy who just knocks at the door so much that, especially for a team that needs to and wants to, you know, go to the World Series this year, they may just be obligated to use him. A couple of things factor into this. One, what is Jose Berríos going to do this year? If he goes back to being the guy he was a couple of years ago, that's good news. I also don't know what the Jays make of Nate Pearson yet. I think you're going to see Nate. I think that they want Nate Pearson. If he isn't traded, they want Nate Pearson to break camp with the team. I think they'd love to see him in the bullpen as a guy who can give them a little bit of depth, maybe with an eye towards eventually seeing him as a late inning, as a late inning alternative. I think the ship has sailed on him as a starter, but I think those two arms will have a say on what happens with Ricky Tiedemann. And then of course there's Yusei Kikuchi as well. So I guess that's kind of a long answer of saying an impressive spring training increases the likelihood that he is with the Blue Jays at some point during the year. I don't know if there's a way he could make the team out of spring training.
It's such a roll of the dice with these young guys, right? Like you look at Ricky's numbers and they're incredible. But then you look at his age, 20 years old, there's only 74 innings pitched as a pro ball player, which again is just such a small sample size. And I know that when Manoah was on the verge of being called up, both Adam and I were screaming from the rooftops, don't do it. Don't ruin this young man's development. And then, of course, we've eaten our words ever since. And so I'm a little bit more willing to let Ricky get that call up, but he is 3 years younger than Manoah was. So it's just such a, I don't know, when it comes to development, I'm just glad I'm not the one making the decisions.
Yeah. And you know, there's something else at work here with Ricky Tiedemann's as well. He is going to be the first possibly elite starting pitcher they have produced out of their pitching factory. You know, we've heard about how much money they've spent on the pitching lab in Dunedin, and they certainly have. I think, and Ricky spent a lot of time there last year, and Ricky has spent a lot of time there. So I think that's, to your point, I don't know if we really know how advanced this guy is. I mean, I think we're getting to the point in baseball where it's not even going to make sense to look at how many innings a guy has in the minors before he's called up. I think you're going to see so much work in pitching labs that the teams they'll have their ways. They'll have their analytical ways. They'll have their biomechanical ways of determining whether or not a guy is ready to pitch in the major. So, you know, the point you make is really good. I think Ricky Tiedemann is a harder guy to get a read on than any other prospect they've had, largely for that reason, because so much of the work he is doing is being done, maybe not behind closed doors, but, you know, in this lab. I don't think we really know where he is at what stage of his career he's in.
That's such a great point. Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit more about this pitching lab?
It's where baseball's going. I mean, it's one of the reasons that you're starting to see so many minor league teams go by the wayside. And it's one of the reasons you've seen Major League Baseball essentially assume control of the minor leagues, because at some point, baseball people got together and said, why are we footing the bill for all these teams and all these different cities when we've got the technology, we got the know-how, we've got the money, we have the resources to sort of bring it all in-house and to keep a closer watch on these guys, right? And it's, you know, when you have a guy in a minor league team, yes, you do have a club, the club trainer there, he's a team employee and all this stuff, and the manager's a team employee and there's game reports and all of this. But the idea of bringing a lot of the development in-house and, you know, utilizing AI and stuff like that, all these things that are now being used by teams with lousy payrolls, teams with elite payrolls, there's a much more, I don't even know, I wouldn't use hothouse, I think is the wrong terminology. It's much harder, I think, it's a much more secretive process, I guess, determining when a person is ready to go to the major leagues. And a lot of the data, a lot of the signals that teams look for aren't things we see. It's nothing to do with the, you know, AAA batting average. Obviously, if a guy is playing at AAA and he's hitting 700 halfway through the year, you're going, but I think as someone pointed out to me last year, what you see when you look at the numbers in AA and AAA and single A probably isn't what the organization is necessarily seeing in the player. They're looking at how he's growing. They're looking at his maturity level. They're looking at bat speed. They're looking at arm slide. They're looking at all that stuff that we can't see. And that's, you know, that's more going to be more and more a thing. I think you are going to see guys, you'll see prospects eventually who'll spend more time in their first year at a quote unquote pitching lab or a hitting lab than actually competing. I think there are going to be some guys that teams are just going to bring in house and they're going to make them projects. And I think maybe Ricky Tiedemann is kind of the first guy out of that group for the Blue Jays. I'll tell you what, it's going to make the folks who have to do prospect rankings in the next 5 years, God love them, because it's going to be a lot harder to do.
This is such an interesting point with the pitching lab and the in-house development, because there's always been this idealism within baseball of don't waste your bullets in the minor leagues. But now you're actually starting to see that kind of come to fruition, because they're able to, you know, tighten up that microscope and kind of focus in. Yeah.
So well, yeah. And if you can work on something and it can be a controlled competitive environment, right? Let's say you're Ricky Tiedemann, you're working on a pitch. Well, if you're the Blue Jays, take 11 guys, go over to the Phillies complex, have Ricky Tiedemann pitch 3 innings in a game in a controlled environment and let him work on what he needs to work on, get the video, go back to the lab, as opposed to sending him to AA. And yeah, you have some control over him. And it's certainly good to see how guys compete. It's great to see guys throw in a real game situation to other players. And I'm not saying you'll ever see that. But I do think you are going to see a time where a minor league player does a little bit with his team, comes back to the pitching or hitting lab, goes to another team, comes back to the pitching or hitting lab. And I think it's a way of controlling the environment. And I think perhaps also a way of, if not necessarily limiting injuries, adjusting more quickly to red flags. And it's something that, as I said, the as long as I've been covering baseball, I used to wonder about that. Why does baseball spends so much money on the minor leagues. It's the one sport where, you know, college basketball, the players are developed by the college. College football, the NBA players are developed by college basketball. NFL players are developed by college basketball. NHL players are developed by college hockey or junior hockey. Baseball, well, you draft them and then you pay a lot of money to develop them. And it only makes sense that at some point teams would look at this and go, okay, how can we kind of do this a little more efficiently? And that's what we're seeing.
So with these pitch labs, hitting labs, essentially this is a high-tech batting cage, right? This is, you've got all the cameras, you're the Rapsodo machines, you're just taking every analytic, but that's essentially what it is, right? Controlled environment.
Yep.
This is a indoor opportunity to just throw a simulated game or whatever the case may be, and then pull every piece of data from every single pitch.
Yeah, and I know there are teams like the Tampa Bay Rays that do a lot of the those visualization drills with their players. It's really made it difficult to get an accurate gauge on where a young player or a young pitcher is. For those of us on the outside.
And this is so new, cutting edge for the Jays organization. Even Alek Manoah missed out on it, is what you're saying.
Well, I mean, the pitching lab came
out on it is the wrong way to put it, but it was, this is a since
less focused on. Yes.
Yeah. Well, this was all part of the redevelopment of the minor league complex, right? They sunk a lot of money into that. And the whole spring training site has been altered. And that was very much. And again, that gets to, it's another thing that, you know, an organization that didn't have a lot of, home crowds for a couple of years, felt confident enough in the vision of Mark Shapiro that they sunk a bunch of money into technology. Right. And every team, I mean, every team is doing it. You know, there, I shouldn't say every team. I don't know, for example, a team like Oakland, I don't know necessarily what they're doing, but teams are starting to really focus on that. And it makes a certain amount of sense. I don't know what it means for the minor leagues. Frankly, I don't think it can mean anything good for the minor leagues. And that's, you know, that's another story. But in terms of efficiency, you know, you look at a AAA roster, how many guys on the Buffalo Bisons are probably realistically going to play for the Jays, right? And you ask yourself, okay, why do the Jays need to worry about that? Why do they need to worry about guys who are never going to be in their team, right? Why not focus on the 20 or 30 or however many prospects you have that have a legitimate shot of at some point being in the majors? And as I said, I think baseball teams have come to that conclusion that they have to be more efficient when it comes to this.
It is going to be so interesting, Jeff, when they get to the point, like we just brought up the 74 innings by Ricky Tiedemann, right? And it's going to be so interesting to see innings almost go out the window when it comes to development. It's not going to matter, right? Like the way you're explaining it and the way that they're going to be focused in on these labs and isolating strengths and stuff like that and bolstering players, you know, one-on-one. It's crazy to me that 74 innings in pro ball, it doesn't really matter. You could still see him get the call up this year.
Yeah. I think they're going to be, and this again, will put pressure on the teams that, you know, it's going to have to go on a case by case basis, right? Cause there are players that you probably will want to see. You may want to see a full year out of somebody at AAA or at AA, but I think with pitchers, it's, you know, building up arm strength, all of that stuff. Can you build up? Why can't you build up arm strength in a pitching lab? Why can't you get a guy to throw 70 pitches or 80 pitches every 3 days in a pitching lab? Right. I mean, that's what
I can. Yeah.
That's where I think you're going to see the real impact. I think for position players, there's probably still going to be something to be said for, you know, playing every day, right? You're the dude out of college and now you got to play every day. And we think you might be able to be our starting shortstop at some time. So I think in that case, you may see a guy, you know, the thing will still hold true. But I think pitching is it's the next 5 years is going to be like the Wild West. We're going to see stuff with pitchers. We're just going to shake our head and go, didn't see that coming.
Well,
okay. So let's take a left turn here. We watched Rafael Devers get that monster deal with the Red Sox, 300 plus million, 11 years. And I think that's really going to affect next year's third base market, right? Manny Machado most likely going to opt out of his contract. And then after him, I think it's pretty safe to say Matt Chapman is probably going to be the most sought after third baseman in that market. So he's going to be coveted. He's going to be expensive. On top of it, I could be full of it here, Jeff, but I feel like the Blue Jays don't really have an internal option ready for next year. Maybe Aroldis Martinez, fingers crossed, like it is possible. We'll see how his development goes. What do you think the Jays should be doing with this third base hole for next year? Like, is there any chance Chapman comes back? He's going to be pricey.
Listen, if we're already up against the CBT, if you had said to me, would you approach Matt Chapman about signing a 3-year extension? I would certainly do that. And I think the Jays probably will. You know, they do have some depth in the minor leagues. I really don't quite know what to make of Aroldis Martinez yet. He needs to develop a little more as a hitter. And there, I think, is an example of a guy that hitting lab isn't going to do him any good. He needs to develop as a hitter and play every day and face guys who are going to throw nasty breaking pitches and guys who are going to throw at him and all that stuff.
I shouldn't say there aren't any options. There are Addison Barger and stuff.
Barger is he's an interesting guy to me. I think this is a way where I think you could possibly see, I think Addison Barger, Kevin Biggio, Santiago Espinal, I don't think all three of them are Blue Jays property by the end of spring training. I think something happens. I think Addison Barger is a guy who could force his way onto that team. And people I talk to say he could play second base if he had to. So we'll throw that out there. But for Matt Chapman, I know from having a couple of conversations with Matt last year at the ballpark, he's certainly open to signing an extension. Both he and his wife really like it in Toronto. I would think the Jays have to have a discussion with him. I would not at all be surprised if they get a deal done with him. You know, Chris Bassett's a buddy of his. They're really close. Chris Bassett's with the team now. Matt Chapman was a guy that, as the season went on, really started to impose his will in the clubhouse a little bit. I think he's an important guy for this organization, and I can see them getting a long-term deal with Matt Chapman done. And I'm probably going to regret saying this, but I can see them getting a deal with Matt Chapman done before I can see them getting a deal done with either Vladdy or Bo.
It's starting to look that way. I mean, the one thing this front office is,
we're almost at the point, why do you sign them to long-term? Unless, because they're young enough, unless you're going to buy out 3 years of their free agency, a 6 or 7 year deal. Other than that, why would you? Why wouldn't you run this out on a year-to-year contract? I mean, it'll probably drive Bo nuts if you do it. But at this point, where do you start? Who do you commit to? My friend Kevin Barker makes this point. I think Bo had a better year than Vladdy did last year. And Kevin's point is, what if Bo has another year where he's better than Vladdy? Which is possible. Mm-hmm. Do you change? Because I think in the back of everyone's mind, there's always been this thing, get Vladdy done. Bo has another year where he's your best player in September. And he's a shortstop. And we're all seeing, shortstops with one leg. Carlos Correa are getting tons of money, right? So we're seeing where the shortstop market is going. I'm almost at the point where I think you play this out and see where it goes. And I know that's going to drive me nuts, and it's going to drive Blue Jays fans nuts. But I think that's just kind of where we are, you know? And I keep thinking about the Toronto Raptors and the freedom that Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster, their front office, got from winning a title. You can literally do anything once you win a title. You win a title, you can do anything. The Jays win the World Series, you can trade Vladdy the next year. You can trade Bo the next year. You know, people will be upset, people will be up in arms, but hey, this is a front office, it's got a World Series. Maybe it knows what it's doing. I've always kind of kept that. And it's the same thing with the Leafs in this city. I don't know what the hell happens if the Leafs ever win a Stanley Cup. Kyle Dubas may just decide to trade everybody, because there is a currency that comes with winning a championship. And there's a freedom that comes with winning a championship. So I've often kind of kept that in the back of my mind. What would happen if the Jays were to go on and win the World Series? Does that make it easier to make a tough decision on one of these two guys at some point? Because I think for the past 2 years, I've wrestled with this idea. How do you get both of these guys signed? And then if you put me up against the wall and said, you got to pick one of those two guys to sign. You're going to pick one of those two guys. We've got 1 7-year contract we can give to a player. Who are you going to give it to? Well, my first inclination is Vladdy. But then, I don't know. What's Vladdy going to look like 4 years down the road? What's Bo going to look like 4 years down the road? You know, and both play hurt, both play every day. So, you know, yes, H's, but I mean, it's not like there's, it's not like you're gambling on a guy who's injury prone and a guy who isn't injury prone. You're going to look at Vladdy. You're going to say every year, we're going to be wondering, is he going to come into camp in shape? We're always going to be doing that with Vladdy. That's just the way it is. It was the same thing with his dad. So it's a really complicated situation. And I'm, as I said, almost at the point now where I think if you're the Blue Jays, you keep going year to year, but this gets back to the CBT. If you told me that they'd be close to it and wouldn't have one of these two guys locked up, or, and here's a guy we haven't talked about really, Alec Manoah at some point is going to want a lot of money, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Going to deserve a lot of money. We're here and we haven't taken care of our three biggest homegrown guys. It's a fascinating place we're in right now with this organization. It really is.
Fascinating is the perfect word, because if there's one thing this front office has done, it's they have proved to this fan base they will spend money. But the one thing that they have yet to do is that monster deal, right? The $300 million deal, the 10-year long-term big money deal. When we are talking Matt Chapman, and you look at what Devers just got, and Manny Machado is going to opt out and probably just re-up on another $300 million deal is my guess. Do you think Chapman is a $150 million guy? And do you think that it's probably going to take, as a 29-year-old, going to take a 6-year Springer type deal?
I don't know, because
it's so hard with the way money is right now in this league. Also,
it's also, what is he going to give you offensively? I think we know what Matt Chapman is. He's going to hit doubles and home runs. He's not going to much of an average. He's going to play the hell out of defense. And this is, you know, I also want to see how doing away with the shift, whether that increases Matt Chapman's value. I don't see any way it would decrease it, but you know, one of Matt Chapman's strengths is he's basically a one-man shift, right? We saw that this year with Matt Chapman at 30. Basically, he's the only guy on the left side of the infield a lot of the time because he's so good. And there's a value in that. With the shift being gone, does that lessen a portion of the best part of his game, which is his defense, right? That is far and away. I mean, if I say Matt Chapman to you, you're going to think defense. So maybe we need to see how that pans out. I don't know about a dollar figure with him, just because the batting, if he was a guy who was hitting 275 or 280, then yeah, but don't know, you know, how you would compare him to a guy like Nolan Arenado or somebody like that. So, but I also think with Matt Chapman, I don't think Matt Chapman's going to undervalue himself, but I also think Matt Chapman's the type of guy that probably wouldn't hold out to make sure he gets that extra 10 or 15 million. Mm-hmm. Right. I think being happy matters to him. You know, and again, he likes the city. He likes the front office. He likes the team. He really likes the manager. I don't know about how much of a dollar value I'd put on him. But I think, as I said, that tells me that they'll try to get something done with him.
Do you think a deep playoff run with the Blue Jays this season would help Matt Chapman come back to Toronto? In that sort of a case, do you think that winning and being that close matters, or do you think,
or is that just going to drive his price up? And
No, I honestly don't think it matters to him. I mean, I'm not saying that Matt Chapman would love to play in Toronto if the Jays finished 100 games out of first place.
Yeah,
but I mean, this team's not going to fall off the cliff in the next 3 years. It's just not. Sure.
He came up in Oakland. Everywhere seems like the promised land.
All right.
Nothing is ever 100% certain, but I don't think if you put 100 baseball people in the room and said the Jays are going to fall off the cliff in the next 3 years, I don't think anybody would agree with that. So I don't think it's necessarily it would have an impact one way or another on.
If that is a factor in his decision, you're saying he already buys into that this team is a contender and it's already. Okay. Fair enough.
You've talked to him enough last year, and Matt is a pretty easy guy to talk to. He's a big roots reggae fan. So we get along very well. he really likes it here, and he sees what this team is about. And he's a very supportive voice for the front office in the clubhouse. And, I remember a conversation I had with Buck Martinez early in the year, and Buck was talking about Matt Chapman, and he made the point that it was just after Buck got back, and he made the point that he thought that we were going to see Matt Chapman become his line was he will be the loudest voice in that clubhouse at some point. And I think we started to see that towards the end of the year. And coming up with the value for Matt Chapman. I think you at least have to have the discussion with him though, because if you can get him locked up, that does kind of eliminate an area of concern for you. And especially given the fact that we've already kind of hinted that at some point the rubber's going to have to hit the road with Bo, right? So at least having that sense of stability at third base, and a guy who, regardless of the year he has, is still going to hit home runs and play good defense. I think he makes them. There's a certain value to that for the Blue Jays.
Could not agree more. I got one more question for you, and we'll throw to Adam for listener questions. If we don't get to some listener questions here, we'll get in trouble. But I really appreciate how generous you've been with your time, Jeff. Let's end our regular.
It's either this or shoveling snow. So the longer,
anything we can do to help.
As I was looking out the window here, I realized that's true. But on the other hand, the more I talk to these guys, the heavier the snow is going to get.
More snow to shovel. Yeah, this is true.
I'll deal with that.
Okay. Okay. So get in and you can win. Seems to be the mantra in baseball these days. But winning the division obviously makes life easier. When you look at this Toronto Blue Jays team as is, without any extra additions, are they going to compete for the division?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I guess I need to say define compete, win the division. I still think the Yankees are awfully good. And I was not all in on the Yankees last year. I didn't like what I saw from their pitching. Getting Frankie Monta. I was largely underwhelmed by the Yankees. I'm not anymore.
Yeah.
I'm not overwhelmed by the Yankees. I'm not underwhelmed by them anymore. I think the biggest thing I saw to the Yankees last year was you saw guys like Peraza, like you saw some of those young guys, the next wave, and you saw Gleyber Torres kind of find his footing. I think they're a really good team, and I think they'll go into the year I would say they're the second best team in baseball behind Houston. I don't think anybody's going to touch Houston.
Can the Jays be 3 to 5 games back going into September?
Oh yeah. 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 I think they're, if I had to do it right now, I would pick the Jays as a very strong second place team. I still think there's some separation. Pardon me. There's some separation between them, Tampa, Boston, and Baltimore. I thought I'd see a little more from Baltimore this year, but I understand what they're doing. But yeah, I think, put it this way, if the Yankees don't win the division, I think the Jays will be the team that wins the division. And I think they'll be a comfortable playoff team. You know, we'll be looking at the final, 10 games of the season, and they'll be in the playoffs, and we'll just be trying to figure out, okay, who are they going to face? how is that going to go? But I think, you know, and I understand, having said that, you know, losing Teoscar's offense, all the stuff that's gone on with this team. And I think you kind of get into it. It can be a dangerous game when you look at the projected WAR for players and start adding up the WAR and going, oh, look, it's 98. They're going to win 98 games this year. But I do think the improvements they've made defensively in the outfield, I do think that, knock on wood, a healthier George Springer, and Vladdy, who was a little more like the Vladdy of 2 years ago, all these things I expect to see happen, I think really puts them in a position to challenge the Yankees. The Yankees may just be too good for them, but, you know, let's look ahead a bit. Yankees, Jays in a series. I think the Jays would be very close to the Yankees in a series. I still have some concerns about the bullpen, and I'd still like to see one more major league outfielder slash hitter in that team. Doesn't have to be an everyday guy. But somebody better than a Nathan Lucas or a Kevin Biggio or maybe even a Santiago Espinal. Somebody better than that.
Would you be into a Robbie Grossman, an Adam Duvall type?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Just you know, somebody with a bit of a track record, somebody that I can count on lately, if somebody can hit a fastball, somebody who can make the routine play for me. And I think that, you know, there are enough players out there that you could probably add one of those guys. But I also think if you're the Jays, you know, you do get to a point where I think Dalton Varsho told us he's showing up on February 12th. So we're kind of less than a month before guys start showing up in Florida. I guess a day less than a month as we sit here today. You do get to a point where teams kind of go, okay, time out. We've done all this stuff in the off season. We've got these young guys coming in. Let's see what Addison Bargo. $2 or $3 million on a guy. But having said that, yeah, I think there's certainly room for one of those types of hitters on this team. And I think you'll see the Jays do that, but they've got to bring more arms in the bullpen. They have to bring another arm, at least another arm of some significance into the bullpen.
By some significance, you mean high leverage, right? We need somebody in the back end, or,
you know what I would say? Somebody capable of giving me high leverage.
David Phelps,
you know, who Zach Britton, who's playing catch, is working out with Caleb Joseph, you know, a guy like that. I guess a guy that might be a bit of a low risk, high reward guy with a bit of a track record. A guy who, if he's healthy, and again, there's all these this with these guys right now. Yeah. There's somebody out there, Liam Hendricks, you know, coming off the trade block because of his illness has really screwed a lot of teams, I think, because I think a lot of people thought that there was a chance that the White Sox would be looking at moving him. There isn't that other guy. There isn't another Liam Hendricks out there right now, right? There's just a bunch of guys you're kind of taking a shot on. But that's kind of what the Baltimore Orioles did last year, and it worked out. So I'd like to see the Jays do that. Bring in some guys to throw hard and see if they stick.
All right. I don't want to keep you from your snow shoveling too long here, Jeff. So we'll quickly get a couple listener questions in and we'll let you be on your way. Again, thank you so much for joining us.
All right. We got a new catchphrase for the show, though, the Walk-Off Podcast. It's better than shoveling snow. So I'm sure we'll get the graphics done up over the weekend and throw your face on there, Jeff. All right.
From shoveling BS to shoveling snow.
Oh, that's way better. That's why you're the pro. All right. We got two questions we'll get to here and we'll let you go. So first, what comes in from our YouTube comments, the Chuck 181 says, hey, Jeff, on your podcast last week, Barker had said Bo's relationship with the Jays is souring. Is that just a rumor or is there more to that?
Kevin, frankly, has sources in that organization that I don't. Well, I'll put it this way. anytime anybody talks to Vladdy about signing a long-term contract here, he says he's ready to sign a long-term contract here. Anytime anybody talks to Bo about signing a long-term contract, he essentially says he wouldn't mind signing a long-term contract here. But there's always kind of that, you know, that dot, dot, dot. Uh-huh. Bo did renew. He forced the Blue Jays to renew him last year, which doesn't necessarily make a difference in terms of how much money he would end up making. But it is an indication that, and Alec Manoah did the same thing, by the way, it is an indication that Bo's value of himself does not match, or Bo and his agent's value of himself does not match the Blue Jays' valuation of him. Let's see what happens. Arbitration salary figures are exchanged. I believe today's the exchange date. Let's see what happens here. Let's see what the difference is between Bo Bichette's ask and the Blue Jays' offer. Let's see what the back and forth is about that. Bo's been very quiet this offseason. I don't know if he's doing stuff in the winter tour. I don't think he is. I don't want to read too much into that. I know there are people who are going to go, oh my God, he's pissed off at the organization, so he's not coming up to Toronto in January. I wouldn't want to go there. But there has always been the sense that that Bo is going to be the tougher sign than Vladdy. And part of that may be, it may be a language thing in that, when you're speaking in your first language, you're generally more comfortable with nuance and choosing words. And plus Bo's a really, and I'm not saying Vladdy isn't smart, but Bo's a really smart guy. And when you're really smart speaking in your first language, it can be a little more blunt. People tend to read things into it more. Whereas Vladdy's approach, as I said, has always been, yeah, I want to play here. I want to play here. I want to be a career Blue Jay. Vladdy never even mentions, he never even mentions the money. He just says, I want to play here. I want to be here every day. And he doesn't say, I want to be here every day, but they're going to have to pay me what one. So it's going to, I mean, there's none of that. Yeah. And I also think that there's also, frankly, I just think it's harder to sign Bo because of the position too, because he's a shortstop. Mm-hmm. He sees what's going on. He sees the money these guys are making, and he can compare his numbers over the past 3 years to Carlos Correa better or close. And so I think that may be the nexus of that situation. And the other thing, and I don't think I'm telling tales out of school here, but I think that Bo is a lot happier having John Schneider as manager than he was having Charlie Montoyo as manager. And that's, he just is. I think there was a sense that Charlie wasn't as supportive of some of his players as they expected him to be. I know that the day when Charlie was fired, I mean, it was really hard. Usually a manager gets fired and all you hear is, boy, we let him down. We feel like this is on us and this is a reflection of us. It's not a reflection on him. He's a great, there was none of that. There was a sense of it had to happen.
Yeah.
And on the record and off the record, there was a sense of it had to happen. And I can just tell you, Bo was one of the players. There were a couple of other guys. Jordan Romano was another guy. There are a couple of players who were not upset that mm-hmm. happened. So maybe that kind of fed into this as well. But let's see what happens in arbitration this year. And let's see where that goes with Bo and the Blue Jays. I will say this, knowing Bo as I do, it's not irreparable. Whatever stress there is, if the Jays made him an offer that he was comfortable with, he'd sign.
Yeah.
So it's not to the point where he won't sign.
Do you think, just quickly here, do you think that there is anything they can do with arbitration negotiations this year to maybe make up for last year? Do they slide him an extra $1 million on their offer, or does that make a difference?
I don't think that's the way they work. I think they're pretty cut and dried when it comes to arbitration. And, Bo is, it's another offseason where Bo's seen guys sign free agent contracts, right? And
there's going to be more big contracts over the next 3 years that he's going to get to watch, right? Soto, Shohei Ohtani. I know they're not the same position, but
yeah,
no, the whole market's going to inflate over the next 3 years. He is no rush to sign something big.
And I've also, and I've made this point several times with, because people have said, okay, well, the Atlanta Braves got all their players signed and all this, but let's keep in mind that a lot of the signings that Atlanta gets done, you know, I can't say this any delicate way. Bo and Vladdy's fathers made a crap ton of money as ball players. Neither of them, both of those kids are set for life.
Right.
You know, a guy like Ozzie Albies, that the Braves took advantage, frankly, of the domestic situation of some of their minor league players to get them signed to these bargain basement contracts. Vladdy's old man's a Hall of Famer, right? And he's made a ton of money. Bo's old man has gone to the All-Star game and is a bright guy and took care of his money, right? So we're talking about two guys who have a real good sense of what they should be paid. And that's always, I just think that's something you need to keep in mind when you talk to these guys, the domestic background. Yes, guys want to get paid what they're worth, but there are guys who will look at a situation and go, boy, I really like it here. I may cut them a break. And you know, God, even if I cut them a break, I'm still going to be able to take care of my family for life. Yeah. These two guys don't see it that way.
Fair enough. So many follow-up questions going through my head right now, but I know we're running tight for time here and I don't want to keep it too long. I do got to get to this one last listener question though. Mr. Krister wants to know, which new acquisition do you think will overachieve or surprise Jays fans the most? And is there a particular addition that you personally are really excited to see on this team? And then we'll let you out of here.
Yeah. I mean, the addition, okay, I'm going to phrase this way. The addition I'm excited to see is Kevin Kiermaier, just because I love watching him catch balls in the outfield. So that is going to be, that's
okay. Going to be
the guy that I am really, really intrigued with. I talked about this a little bit at the start, is Dalton Varsho. I'm really, you know, he's such a good athlete. We haven't even talked about how the rules changes may affect him. I think this guy is going to surprise people with the number of bases he steals this year. You know, Kevin talked to him about he's pretty much a pull hitter. He's a left-handed pull hitter. I'm intrigued by seeing what a year around Don Mattingly will do for him. You know, another one of the great left-hand hitters of all time. Of all the moves they made the offseason, when we went in the offseason, I said to myself, I don't want to see Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Teoscar Hernandez both in the outfield next year. I don't. If we see that, this team's, they're not going anywhere. It's not good enough defensively. And I just don't know about Lourdes. I don't know if Lourdes I don't know if he's ever going to hit for power anymore. So Dalton Varsho would be the guy that I think he's got the potential to really improve on the numbers that he put up last year. But in terms of just flat out enjoying watching the dude play, it'll be Kevin Kiermaier. And it may be part of that is he played for Tampa, right? How many times Jays fans, how many times has Kevin Kiermaier done something to break your heart, right?
Oh, yeah. Too many. Too many.
Exactly. So maybe I'm playing off that a little bit. But I think Dalton, I had a good feeling about the Dalton Varsho deal the day it was made. I thought that's exactly what they need. He profiles perfectly. And, you know, I think he's going to enjoy playing in the AL East. I get the sense that this is a guy that is very comfortable kind of in that environment, right? That really competitive environment where it's going to be hot. You know, he talked to us about coming up through the Diamondbacks organization. He loved the players and he loved the organization, but there was kind of that ... right? Essentially, but if I'd stayed with the Diamondbacks, I'd never get in the postseason because of the division work. And I think moving to the AL East is going to be, he's going to play up to it. And I think it's a really, really good pickup for them. I really do. And it's a pickup they had to make. They absolutely had to make that deal.
He is a great fit within this team. Yes. Honestly, Jeff, again, thank you so very much for taking the time to join us. We know you do not have to join a couple boneheads on a small podcast, so we appreciate it.
No, no problem. I feel bad for last week I was supposed to be on. I literally forgot, but I learned my lesson, went out and brought me my 2023 Moleskin.
There you go. You've got your agenda.
I got my agenda. There's no excuses. Guys, I really, thanks a lot.
Absolutely, Jeff. Appreciate we are big it. Fans. We'll bug you mid-season. Maybe we can twist your arm to come back on. Until then, a very happy 2023 to you.
You guys too. Take care.
All right. Cheers.
Thank you, boys.
Yes, we're good. Thank you so much, good. Jeff. Really appreciate it, man.
Barker is back. Barker was in Mexico actually for the week. He's back tomorrow. So, and I know I mentioned him. I was going on with you guys, and he said the same thing. You guys want to get us on? You want to tag team? Get us on sometime, even whenever you guys feel free, because we're really not doing much of anything.
Would love that. Would absolutely love that. I was going to ask you about Barker. So yeah, maybe we'll, if we just shoot, what's the best way to do this? Just over Twitter, shoot you an email or what?
You know what? I would just go by email. Just email me.
Okay.
But DM is fine too, because I follow you guys, but email's better. And yeah, it won't be an issue. Like I said, I mentioned it to Kevin. He said, oh yeah, say hi to them. And we should said, I enjoyed being on with them and we should try to do it again early in the year. So if you guys want to do that,
okay,
pick a day and we'll do it for sure.
Okay. Amazing. Maybe we'll bug you for next Friday or something like that, but I really appreciate that, Jeff. Thank you so much.
Good stuff.
Okay, man.
Take care. Cheers.
Be well.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh. Osborne with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.